Okay, welcome back. Hope you had a great day today. Sit back for 3 hours of interesting, provocative, unusual radio information you'll find nowhere else as we continue our journey through this strange world of ours, talking to some of the most interesting and controversial people on the planet. And back with us tonight, it's an honor to have one of the most remarkable American patriots, Eustace Mullins, whose reputation is, well, depending on who you talk to, either brilliant or the opposite of that. He is a man that has few people standing on top of the fence anymore. And it's an unusual event to have him on a radio talk show anymore. Eustace, welcome back to the program.
Well, I'm glad to be on your show.
You were on our colleague and friend Sherman Skolnick and Lenny Bloom, I guess, had you on their program recently, yes?
Yes, they had me on my program several times in Toronto.
Well, Sherman is a remarkable journalist in his own right and a longtime friend of this program and a friend of the truth.
Well, he's much more courageous than I am. You know, he got 67 judges sent to prison in Cook County, which is the crookedest county in the United States, Al Capone's old territory.
I know. He's amazing, and that's
really
absolutely
is.
True. You, just for our listeners who don't know much about Eustace Mullins, if you do a Google search on him, you'll find a lot of hit pieces describing his background. He is, among other things, called by some of his detractors the most vicious anti-Semite on the planet.
And the most virulent, they used to say.
Although virulent.
No one's, I've never said anything virulent about anybody.
Well, anyway, you were a veteran, U.S. Air Force. You 38 months of service in World War II.
Yeah, that's the last war we won, by the way.
Well, if we won it, I'm not sure who won the war, actually.
Well, we're not exactly a winner in any case.
Yeah, yeah. Where were you stationed in the war?
Well, I was stationed all over the United States. I went to a number of schools, and they never could figure out just what to do with me.
Oh, you were a troublemaker back then, too, huh?
Oh, I was that. I never really fitted in.
Yeah, understand.
But it was a great experience, and I saw most of the country.
Yeah.
And most terrific guys, too. I was in there with illiterate hillbillies and all sorts of people.
A real cross-section of America, as it used to be.
As it used to be, as it was in 1940.
Yeah. In your book, you didn't waste much time after the war was over. In 1952, you wrote a book that blamed Paul Warburg, Bernard Baruch, and other U.S. and world Zionists for drowning Americans in debt. And boy, were you prescient with that one. That you're half a century ahead of your time in some respects. You were probably the first person who identified the real evil on the planet, and that's usury.
Usury was Ezra Pound's great topic. He fulminated against usury during much of his life, which was an unusual subject for a poet at that time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The book itself was, I guess, controversial back then. Who published it? Do you remember?
The New York publishers unanimously refused it, which really stunned me because I thought everybody in New York would want this book. There was no history of the Federal Reserve System and never had
been one. Right.
And I thought every publisher would grab it just for the just as something unusual.
Well, of course.
But they said no, that if they published it, the banks would call in their notes. They would be closed down the next Monday.
And that's probably some truth to that. That book was the first book, I think, the first book that really told it like it is regarding the Federal Reserve and the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, which put our country's banking reserves in the hands of some international banksters for the purpose, of course, of carrying out a plan pretty much for world control and, well, we call it the New World Order today, globalism.
Oh, yes. And what they really did, as Ezra explained to me, they seized control of the money and credit of the entire people and perverted it to their own sinister operations.
Well, that sums it up. Now, this book of yours, Secrets of the Federal Reserve, burned in West Germany in 1955.
The entire printing in German was 10,000 copies, and it was burned. It's the only book burned in Europe since 1945.
Amazing. Amazing. And as we know now, of course, those of us who follow politics and the real history of our country in the last, 100 years, we do know that the Federal Reserve is probably the biggest scam and crooked shakedown in the history of America. Easy. It literally turned the country inside out, is what it is.
Well, it really has. And I've been telling my audiences for 50 years that the Federal Reserve system is no more federal than Federal Express, that it has no reserves because it prints money and it doesn't need any reserves. It can print all the money at once. And I also say that it's not a system, but a criminal syndicate, which is the most direct naming of it than anyone has ever done. No
right.
one has ever called the Federal Reserve people criminals, but I've done it for years. And I've actually been received in the Federal Reserve building on Washington and talked to some of the top people there.
When was this?
About 10 years ago.
What'd they say to you?
Well, they were very anxious to meet me. You know, the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, they have ordered every subsequent printing of this book. And I never advertised it. I don't know how they found out about it. But after I got a new printing, I would, in a matter of weeks, receive a check and an order from the Federal Reserve System.
They wanted to know how much you knew and how much you were able to synthesize.
Well,
what
that's why they were very anxious to talk to me.
Right.
I went in there without an appointment, and they said, "Oh, well, we don't receive anyone without an appointment." And then they asked the chief administrator of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors if he would talk to me, and he agreed immediately.
Amazing. Well,
and he was not at all hurried. He didn't try to hurry me out at all.
Your representation of their game.
Well, I think they had been wanting to meet me for years.
Well, your reputation preceded you.
Oh, yes.
Now, where we are today, Eustace, and the last time we talked was not 3 or 4 years ago, I guess.
Yes.
Things have transpired at such a pace, it's almost impossible for the average American to even begin to grasp it, should he or she even want to try. This thing is running so fast now.
It really is. There's so many pressures from so many directions that the money system could go anyway.
The rise of the euro, the decline of the dollar, none of this, of course, is accidental. It's all manipulated, all planned.
Well, I never thought that the euro would be able to compete against the dollar like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's turned out that they already knew that the dollar was going, and so they had to have a substitute.
Right, right. All right, let's look at the administration of this country now, the executive branch. We have Bush 43, his second term, allegedly winning the election. Give us a little idea of how you view it, where it's going. He has recently, he and Cheney and the others who are pulling the strings, completed pretty much what you'd call a purge of elements within the highest levels of the government, which might not go along 100% with the Bush-Cheney agenda and the New World Order agenda, of course. How does it shake down to you? What are we looking for in the next 4 years, you say?
Well, I said in my book, The World Order, published 20 years ago, that the Bush family were lackeys of the Harrimans, and the Harrimans were lackeys of the Rothschilds. And so that tells the whole story right there. Because when you see Bush, you're not seeing the whole picture. The Harrimans were, the Rothschilds financed the Union Pacific Railroad through Kunlop Company of New York through Jacob Schiff. And so the Harrimans then were in their debt, and they became enormously wealthy.
Uh-huh.
They became so wealthy that they had to have very experienced money managers to handle their fortune. And they hired the Bush family, and the firm Brown Brothers Harriman resulted from that. And that's where the Bushes made their money.
Interesting. You mentioned Jacob Schiff, and we've talked for years and years on this program with many, many guests about the fact that there is a I don't want to call it a bloodline, but some people do. The rich tend to stay together. You mentioned Jacob Schiff, and I come back with Al Gore's daughter just married the grandson of Schiff.
Oh, yes. The Gore family has it made. They married into one of the great fortunes because the Schiff fortune was always made around 1900, and, of course, it's continued. They haven't lost any money.
The rich rarely do.
No, they don't. They're ready for it. They're ready
right.
to trim the sails whenever they have to.
So when you see the Bush administration making policy decisions, you see this immediately in terms of the Rothschilds in England making decisions.
Oh, yes, I certainly do. They don't represent any American factor that I know of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right, back in a minute with Eustace Mullins. We'll see what he has to say about the war for Iraqi oil and other things on the near horizon. Iran, Syria. By the way, our ambassador from Syria was recalled today by the Bush administration. The very same day that the Russians announced that they would indeed go ahead with the sale of surface-to-air missiles to Syria, which Sharon and the Israeli government are enraged about. So things heating up on that plate. Back in just a couple minutes with Eustace Mullins. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Eustace Mullins. As the great game continues to be played on the planet, the labels are thrown in and the situation is restructured to suit the purposes of keeping the public confused and in fear and certainly under stress as much as possible, never more obvious than now. The Rothschilds out of London, again, are running most of the show in the West, if not all of it. There are oligarchs in Russia who are loyal to them, of course. There are crime families all around the world that are loyal to them. It's quite an organization, and if the Federal Reserve is a syndicate in America, the Rothschilds certainly probably had, in the terms that we have been discussing, the syndicate on a worldwide basis. The East versus West Cold War is over. There is no more easy way to polarize the Americans against the Soviet Union because it is now officially gone, but is it? Hard to know. Russian nationalism is on the rise. So there had to be a new villain, and the new villain turned out to be something called terrorism, the war on terror, the latest boogeyman to keep people spending money and off balance. Now we see the Middle East being lined up, apparently, Eustace Mullins, for further warfare. Iran, of course, the drums beating very loudly in Washington and London with Mr. Blair, and, of course, quietly in Israel to attack and reduce Iran to perhaps third world status. That's one way to look at it. Now, Syria, of course. Today, Russia informed Israel that a controversial sale of the weapons system I mentioned, the SA-18 surface-to-air missiles, will go forward. The Israelis and, of course, Washington, says the news story, are enraged by this. So what do we have going? How does it look to you?
Well, this is actually the Middle East controversy and the war in Iraq are the result of a group called the Straussians. They were disciples of Professor Leo Strauss of Rockefeller's University of Chicago.
Right.
And the Straussians are Machiavellians, and they're behind this whole Iraqi adventure. They had a program called the Program for the 21st Century, which called for a domino effect attacking Iraq, Iran, Syria, and Saudi Arabia, which, of course, would eventually bring all the oil of the Middle East under their control. And this is a Straussian operation, and all the people in it are Straussians. And the war on Iraq, in fact, is directly attributable, and I'm the only person who's called attention to this. It goes right back to President Woodrow Wilson, his protege, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and Ronald Reagan. Now, you wonder, what has Ronald Reagan got to do with Iraq? Well, the fact is that the Straussians had no influence in Washington until Reagan was elected president in 1980, and he brought his whole cabinet and his administration from the Hoover Institute at Stanford University in California. And it was these Trotskyite communists in the Hoover Institute who became the backbone of his entire administration. And that is exactly, it led directly to this present situation where we have this war in Iraq.
So amazing how many of the same people are still hanging around who were under the Reagan, at least the second term, if not
the
first.
They are the Trotskyite communists that Reagan brought from California. And they're still there. They achieved positions of critical importance, and they bolstered their strength in intervening years.
How far are we going to go toward this project for a new American century, the agenda of knocking off country after country there? Will the Russians make a stand? Will the Chinese say, you do not invade Iran? We've just signed a mega-billion-dollar deal with the Iranians for natural gas and other energy products. The Russians, of course, keenly interested in maintaining their security, as much of it as they have left. Where are we going to go with that?
Well, it's going right ahead. There's no question about it. In fact, the Bush-hating syndrome of the most recent election, the Bush hating of Operation of George Soros and all these people,
right,
was to punish Bush because he had not fulfilled the program for the 21st century. He went to Iraq, but then he stalled there. He's been stalled there ever since. And they are very anxious to move ahead and attack Iran and Syria, and finally Saudi Arabia.
I have a feeling that there is a sense on their part that they are running out of time to do this reasonably efficiently. If they wait much longer, there will be too many weapons of true mass destruction in the hands of some of the enemies. So,
well, that's why they panicked and they brought in Kerry and decided to dump Bush and replace him with Kerry. But it didn't work, and Bush hung on, and so now they've just got to stay with him.
It was interesting how that election, of course, under a cloud and always will be, much like the 2000 election, saw John Kerry fold up his tents and beat it out of town awfully quickly right after the election was certified as at least reasonably official.
There was no resentment from him whatsoever. And, of course, this was a fraternity brothers contest because two fraternity brothers, Skull and Bones at Yale, were fighting each other, and they are sworn to uphold each other.
Right.
It's a very close fraternity. It's an old Illuminati fraternity from Germany.
Well, this was basically a soap opera for the consumption of the American public, which was whipped up into some kind of a frenzy to try to make them feel that their vote still counted, when in point of fact, of course, it didn't.
And trying to give them a choice. They tried to make this a race, you know.
Right. Well, divide and conquer. Now America is polarized. There are people, half of them are absolutely against the Bush administration, and the other half are pretty much for it. So we've got a country that is split down the middle.
Oh, it certainly is. And there is no meeting ground of the two factions. It's very amazing.
No, it's true. All right. Well, that was, again, by design, and it worked perfectly.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Divide and rule. Back in just a couple minutes with Eustace Mullins. Okay, back with Eustace Mullins, again, one of the most controversial people of our times. Eustace is in his eighth decade. Hard to believe. Time flies, eh, my friend?
Yeah, I'm going to take a vacation one of these days.
One of these years, yeah. All right, so as far as you're concerned, the Rothschild agenda is on track for the Middle East. You do expect a war with Iran. You do expect Syria to be neutralized or reconstituted, as they say, and you do expect the Saudi royal family to be either rehabilitated or exterminated.
Well, they're definitely on the downhill plunge because Israel plans to get rid of them, and Israel itself, the state of Israel, was entirely created by the Rothschild fortune. Mm-hmm. Every dollar which went to settle the pioneers in Israel was paid for by the Rothschilds, and the Rothschild Boulevard in Tel Aviv, the Rothschild Parliament was entirely paid for by one Rothschild in London, Jacob Rothschild.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're just in Rothschild territory there.
There are, interestingly enough, of all the population in the area, 90% are Arab and the rest are Jewish. It's
and they always have been.
Quite, it goes back
to 1880.
Quite a remarkable disparity in the percentages there. Do you expect the Russians to stand up and do anything at all? Is Putin really his own man? He's got the oligarchs to deal with at home, of course, and that recent apparent assassination attempt, or at least notification to Mr. Putin that he was on the line, didn't go by without my notice. I think maybe you saw the story as well.
I didn't see anything on that.
Well, the way he travels is predictable, and apparently one morning before he was to travel by with his motorcade, they found a very large car bomb parked right next to his pathway. That's the word we hear.
Oh, so, I see.
And it might have been just a calling card to let him know that he had better shape up. He's in a big fight there if he is truly a Russian nationalist. Do you see that?
No, he's a KGB man all the way.
Right.
And just like Bush is CIA. I mean, you don't stray far from your beginnings.
You're talking about Bush the Elder, not
Bush. Yes,
Bush 41.
Bush 43 is not CIA.
No.
But when he ran in 2000, I said, people asked me if Bush was going to win, and I said, you can't beat the CIA.
No, that summed it right up. But the question is, if and when the attack on Iran begins, will the Russians do anything, or will they just pull back and fold up and sit on the sidelines? And will the Chinese do anything? First, the Russians. What do you think they may or may not do?
Well, I think they'll... after all, this is their territory, and this is their region, and this is their borders. But I don't think they're going to make a move. I think they'll let us do whatever we plan to do.
All right. The globalist machine is on a roll.
It is.
Will the Chinese roll over and lay down for this, or are the Chinese going to stand up and impress upon the world that they're not going to be a part of the Rothschild Empire?
Well, it was announced on the Internet recently that Russia and China had signed a definite pact to take over the United States.
Well, they've signed a pact to oppose U.S. power and European power.
Well, that's being interpreted by some people as a planned attack, eventually, invasion of the United States, which is quite possible.
Well, we know that the number two top People's Liberation Army general in China has on more than one occasion said that they are preparing now and have been preparing for quite some time to fight, wage, and win a nuclear war with the United States. They've made no bones about it. These are open, obvious, well-quoted statements.
Well, that's why President Clinton was so heavily criticized because of his trade with China, because people were aware that China had this long-term program to attack the United States.
The amount of technology that went to China under the Clintons' tenure was almost incalculably valuable.
Oh, yes, there's no question about it.
Just off the charts. They have been able to, with their ingenuity and hard work, literally leap decades ahead in just a few short years because of the treachery that occurred with the Clintons.
And their population continues to increase at pace. I mean, it's just rolling along.
Well, they're 1.2 billion almost. And they can afford to lose 800 million people in a war and still come out pretty well.
Oh, yes. And even in the Korean War, they were very reckless with their troops. You know, MacArthur killed thousands of them.
Well, they had human wave assaults, which first, of course, was seen in World War II with the Soviet hordes, which went wave after wave, and the North Korean and Chinese volunteers did much the same thing. North Korea remains a client state of China. It's a lapdog, and whatever the North Koreans do, they do with the Chinese blessing, if not direction. Do you see that escalating as well?
Oh, yes, and that is why the fear of North Korea, atomic attack, is so prevalent, because they know that they're doing this under the aegis of China.
And it's not, it has been my opinion, Eustace, that the North Koreans do not need to have actually created and built their own stockpile of nuclear weapons, that they certainly could have them shipped in from China, and no one would ever be the wiser. No one's ever going to know.
And we have no information on that whatsoever.
Now, you notice that Bush is now calling again for diplomacy with North Korea. He's stopped banging on the table with his Khrushchev-like shoe and has backed down. When we look back on American history, as you view it, with this effort, the Harrimans and the Rothschilds, of course, pulling the strings ultimately, the Kennedys come along in the early 1960s. What led to their assassinations, and they're still doing it. John Kennedy Jr., of course, was assassinated as well.
Yes, he was. Yeah. Well, I think that the Kennedys were considered upstarts, because Joe Kennedy himself, you know, when he was ambassador to England, he argued against going to Britain's aid for Roosevelt entirely, and he was finally recalled because of that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember that.
Well, that's a very big factor. And so they were very aware in Washington that the Kennedys were not team players, and I don't think they ever have been.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they've killed them.
Well, no doubt about it. I was particularly, and I've mentioned this several times, saddened by the rapidity and ease with which the American public generally accepted the murder of John Kennedy Jr., his wife and sister-in-law.
No comment at all.
Nothing. It just came and went like it was another page in the newspaper.
And Teddy Kennedy has toed the line ever since. I think he was told that he'd better be a very good boy, and he has been.
Yeah. He's done exactly what he's... Well, I mean, he was certainly... Mary Jo Kopechne, he got away with that, and that was the deal, among other things.
I think it was, because every lawyer and judge in the state of Massachusetts came to his support during that Chappaquiddick incident.
Yep, exactly right. Okay, we'll pause, Eustace, and come right back. I'm Jeff Rentz with Eustace Mullins tonight, a little conversation, and we'll continue after this. Conversation with Eustace Mullins, first half of the program tonight. Eustace, back home here, we watched the Straussian neocon deconstruction of the United States of America, not the least of which is being done by the dissolution, the ignoring of, the lack of enforcement of the international borders of this country. When a country no longer enforces its borders, it ceases to become a nation. Someone said that once a long time ago. Does this flood tide of Latin, there are many nationalities, of course, in the invasion, but up to 20 to 25 million of them are said to be here now. Does this surprise you as a tool and technique?
No, it doesn't, because Mexico's foreign policy is to regain the southwestern United States. And that's a very openly stated program, and
right.
They're determined on it.
Eisenhower was the last president to really try to enforce our international borders, and did so by evicting over a million illegal aliens who were here, sent them out of the country, and things were quiet for some time. But what's going on now is not only a testimonial to the lack of, I can't even say lack of wisdom, the people in the Congress... are almost treasonous in some respects, and some would say they're outright treasonous in many respects. I'm not going to characterize it beyond that, but they're certainly not doing anything, with the exception of a handful, Tom Tancredo, Ron Paul, and others, to try to do something to stop this invasion of the United States of America. I see no real means to end it. The Bush administration clearly is intent upon continuing to flood the country with people who shouldn't be here.
Yes, and the congressional representatives from the southwestern United States are not defending their people at all.
They're
just standing by and making no protest. Well, one or two people from Arizona have uttered little feeble protests, but that's it.
Did you see this particular tool of bringing America down being used so vigorously at this time, or was this in any way a surprise to you?
Well, I really wasn't thinking of it so much in those terms, because I thought there is the excuse that California needs this labor to get out.
It doesn't. Of course, we know now that's completely bogus. It doesn't.
Yeah, that has been sold to the American people as a fait accompli.
Right.
But anyway, that was the ostensible excuse. And I thought, well, if the entire economy of California depends on this, I guess there could be some reason for it. But that is entirely invented and has no basis.
Are you surprised at the vigorous insinuation into our government and our way of life, the will and the ideals of evangelical Christians, Christian Zionists, and others who basically are involved in another crusade mentality in the Middle East? This has been almost a coup, hasn't it?
Well, it has been a coup, but I will give the people full credit for this. You know, people like Pat Robertson have incomes of $5 million a week for many years, and Jerry Falwell, to promote this particular crusade.
$5 million a week?
$5 million a week. And that does not come from ordinary working-class Americans. No one knows where it comes from. I've been told that most of Pat Robertson's money comes out of the Philadelphia Mafia.
Wow. All right. Other tools that are being used to eradicate the American middle class, Eustace? Usury, of course. Most Americans plied with the idea of get their toys now and pay it off later have bitten hook, line, and sinker, and they're in debt. And I think the average adult American's debt load is something $8,000 to $10,000 or something like that.
Oh, yes. And all the adolescents are taught to use credit cards, and they have no concept of money whatsoever. Or of interest or any of those things.
Are you surprised with the decay? And it's not just decay, it's a design.
Well, it's a design, and it's working on all fronts.
All fronts.
The schools and the churches and the government are all working together.
Well, that was
my
next
goal.
Yeah, I was going to mention the schools next. The dumbing down of the American young people is one of the greatest, I think, moral crimes that I've ever seen. These kids now are so much in the dark. Their intellects are not being nurtured. In fact, they're stillborn in many cases. They don't develop at all. They stare at the television. Their minds are reprogrammed. Their intellectual processes are short-circuited. They're taught to be reactive, that's all, not proactive at all in life, and it goes on from there. Of course, you probably know about Charlotte Thompson Iserbeat's book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America.
That's a very good book.
Yeah, it's a wonderful book. But this is really producing a generation. We're working on the second full generation now of people who are just not intellectually active for the most part.
Well, I don't know any young person who's ever read a single one of my books.
I don't know many young people who read many books at all.
Well, that's right. They don't read anything, much less my books. But I don't know how you would reach them. You could only reach them through television, and television is pretty well controlled. There's no outlet there.
You know, that's an interesting point. I was not even thinking along those lines, but the only way to really en masse resurrect or try to resurrect an entire generation or two would be through the very medium that was used to reduce them to utter mediocrity.
Well, that's the only thing you can reach them with.
It won't be through the schools. It would have to be through the mass media, which, of course, is controlled, lock, stock, and barrel by those who...
They're very much into the program, so I don't think you can get any converts there.
Not a big surprise either. The average high school senior today is so far behind his contemporary, her contemporary. 50 years ago, the average high school senior scored and performed as well as the average university graduate does today.
Oh, yes. I had 4 years of Latin in this small town high school here in San Virginia. Of course, that's been dropped many years ago.
Right. Tell us about Ezra Pound. A lot of people don't remember the great American poet and what was done to him, Eustace.
Well, he was not only a poet, but he was a patriot. Mm-hmm. And he really sacrificed his life to keep us out of the Second World War. And that's why they went after him on trumped up charges of treason, which they never dared to try him for because there was absolutely no basis for it whatsoever.
Kind of like the same thing that is being done to Ernst Zundel. No charges, no crime.
He's undergoing the same ordeal. And I have lectured with Ernst Zundel years ago in Canada, and he's the friendliest, most gemütlichkeit German you ever met in your life. And the idea of this war that he's been in there all these years is just incredible.
Okay. The American income tax system, as you've watched the economy over the years, is now beginning to be talked about in terms of being replaced by something. And, of course, that'll be a national sales tax or a value-added tax, just another way to shift the game around, keep people looking, another misdirection, as it were. Do you see that happening fairly soon?
Oh, I've seen it happening right now. I've seen ads on television daily about the IRS is settling $200,000 IRS bills for $30,000 and things like that.
Oh, they're trying to clear the books.
They're trying to clear the books, and I think that it's a pre-bankruptcy operation.
Oh.
Because they're willing to take anything they can get, $1,000 on $100,000.
When you watch television, what do you watch?
I watch mostly cooking shows and travel shows.
Tough to get in trouble with those, I guess.
Well, I've never seen a network program. I don't watch any of the. I heard about Desperate Housewives only through Bill O'Reilly, and these things are totally inconceivable to me. I can't imagine anybody watching something like that.
Well, they do, and they watch them by the tens of millions.
Now, oh, they do indeed. And they must sell products too because they have this tremendous audience.
Yeah. Well, one thing that, now you were born in the 1920s. What year was it, Eustace?
23.
1923.
Right after World War One.
What's that?
It's right after World War
One.
Yeah.
Well, you've seen.
In fact, my parents were married during the First World War.
One thing about today's culture which amazes me, and that is how people are accorded scandal. They're allowed to have scandal in their lives. I'm talking about public figures, about politicians, and I guess a lot of it had to it harkens back to the Clintons, of course. Bill Clinton, of course, made sex, I guess, he redefined sex, and it was okay. And now we have the latest, I guess, with Bill O'Reilly, who was charged by a co-worker with all sorts of indelicate
issues. Well, he got away clean on that, and I was amazed. I thought they would destroy him.
Well, my point is there are many people who are finding themselves in similar predicaments, and America just kind of ho-hums it and chuckles and, oh, well, that's okay. And if this had happened 25, 30 years ago, they're gone.
Well, I grew up in a small town in Virginia, and that sort of conduct up till 1960 would not have been tolerated anywhere. And now it doesn't make a ripple.
It doesn't make a ripple, and you know what it does do? It sells a lot of magazines, it sells a lot of commercial advertisements, and it keeps people talking. And the old adage, I guess, has never been more true. It doesn't matter what they say about you as long as they keep talking about you.
Well, I think the decline in morals is partly due to the fact that the southern states have been federally occupied territories since 1865, and they've been run by puppet political parties. We have had no self-government in the southern states since 1865, and I have said that openly for years, and nobody challenged me whatsoever.
Did you read the book called The Real Lincoln?
No, I've heard about it, and it bears out everything that I'm talking about, because the invasion of the southern states was totally unjustified, was in violation of every moral and political law in this country. You see, the southern states called themselves the Confederacy because they believed that the Articles of Confederation was the true Constitution of the United States. It was never repealed, but it was replaced in 1787 by a secret Masonic meeting in Philadelphia, which brought forth the Constitution, which they have used to the present time. And that Constitution required that every public official in the United States has to swear allegiance not to the United States or to the people of the United States, but to the Constitution of the United States. So we are governed by a document rather than by laws.
Well, it sounds exactly right, and we'll pause and come right back. Another half an hour to go with Eustace Mullins. Stay tuned, and we'll continue. We're going to talk about his book dealing with injections and the idea of vaccines and what they are doing to our children and our adults as well, among other things, as we continue our conversation with Eustace Mullins. Talking with one of the most controversial men of our times, Eustace Mullins, getting his view on the world and what's happening in this country. Did you hear the alleged newscast there, Eustace?
The alleged what?
The alleged newscast that just aired while we were...
No,
there.
I don't pay much attention to those.
Well,
they go by pretty quick.
Yeah, they do. Well, this one had a story about apparently some people in the neighborhood. One home was against the war in Iraq. And their neighbors are very much for it. And it, if nothing else, it did demonstrate the deep, deep divisions in this country. This is nothing like World War II, the Korean War. It approaches Vietnam, but I'm rather thinking it's more severe than that, at least in terms of the election and the vote. It showed, however accurate that was or wasn't, it showed a virtual 50-50 split in America, and the emotions are running deeper and deeper all the time, which again is part of the game. That's the plan.
It certainly is, and people go along with it without question.
The blind allegiance is...
It's absolutely blind.
Is the most frightening
no
of
issues
all.
Are ever discussed. It's strictly a blind loyalty to some particular set of ideas.
And an immediate emotional response,
an
intellectual response. Yeah. Well, that's what they want. They want emoting, reactive people who don't think and don't question. And that's what they've got. At least about half the people are that way anymore. Okay, you wrote a book, Eustace, which is still widely read and highly recommended. It's called Murder by Injection, The Medical Conspiracy Against America.
That's a rather challenging title, but nobody has ever complained about it. I thought it was a little strong when I came out with it, but everybody's accepted it without question.
And that's been the case with much of your writing. People criticize it, but they actually cannot argue with it.
No, they can't argue with it. And I felt I was being very bold in choosing a title like that, and I thought it might hurt the sale of the book, but I've never had any objection to it whatsoever. And we've gone through three editions. I'm ready for a fourth edition right now. And by the way, the biggest followers of the book right now are the Afro-Americans, because Minister Louis Farrakhan has been promoting the book, and his people are ordering large quantities of it. Because, you see, the black people realize that one of their biggest enemies is their diet and the medications they have to get off of it.
Right.
So he's working very hard toward this.
Interesting. We now know, of course, and when was the book first published, Eustace?
1988.
We didn't know then about mercury and vaccines to the extent that we do now.
Oh, no. In fact, they've played right into my hands ever since, because I went out on a limb on a lot of the mercury and vaccine stuff, and it's been totally vindicated ever since.
You were the first person. High profile nature to talk about it.
Yes. Well, actually, there had been individual attacks on mercury and vaccines by people who published little polemics against them, but there had never been a coordinated with the entire medical situation as the way I did it in Murder by Injection.
Tell us more about what's in the book.
Well, it's I wrote the book because I read a book by a friend of mine, which stated, it was called The Drug Trust by Morris Veal, and it stated that all of the drug companies in the United States were controlled by Rockefeller. And I thought that was a very bold statement, and I didn't think it could be upheld. And I went to the Library of Congress and started to look up a history of the American Medical Association. Mm-hmm. I found out there wasn't one. And this is the most powerful lobby in the United States. I thought there'd be at least three books on the AMA, and I found out there wasn't a single one. So before I knew it, I had to sit down and write an entire history of the American Medical Association, which is what Murder by Injection actually is.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only history of the American Medical Association. And it got a very good reception. I was quite surprised.
Well, it's selling on Amazon now, used for almost $50 if you can find it.
Yes. Well, I still have copies of the third edition available. I've been the Farrakhan people bought an enormous quantity from me.
And
that's going to cause me to have to reprint within the next 6 months.
Well, that's okay, isn't it?
No, I'm not complaining.
Here's a review of Eustace Mullins' book, Murder by Injection. This is out of Amazon.com. This is a very fine book. Eustace Mullins is an expert researcher. Previous to this book, he was the first person to reveal the true nature of the Federal Reserve, which has nothing to do with federal, of course. In this book, he details the history of how control of the medicinal market has been won by the FDA and the AMA and similar organizations in other countries, and how the healing of citizens has been put in the hands of the government rather than in the hands of the citizens themselves. Their choices for treatment have been downsized to that of allopathic medicine, a way of treatment that is relatively new, only a few hundred years old, if at that, as compared to medicine that has been practiced for thousands of years. This book details the methods used by the Rockefellers to control the medicinal market to their advantage. It also guarantees a level of population control. Read on, you will be surprised. Murder by Injection. The AMA continues to be one of the most ruthless organizations anywhere. It is the presiding body over many, many wonderful doctors who are literally afraid to step out of line because they will have their licenses yanked or suspended. It's amazing what they've been able to get away with. The story of Royal Raymond Rife, Morris Fishbein and the AMA, and the suppression of so-called alternative treatments for cancer and many other diseases, one of the blackest chapters in American history.
Well, Morris Fishbein was really one of the greatest profiteers, and apparently he didn't even have a medical degree.
I understand that.
And he wanted to be a circus entertainer.
Is it Noel?
Yeah, he had no interest in medicine whatsoever. It was accidental. He was hired as a clerk by the AMA in Chicago as a young person, and he went in and took over the whole thing over.
Yeah, Morris Fishbein ran the AMA for, what, three and a half decades?
Something
yes. Like that.
And he converted it into his private...
his own fiefdom.
It's a fiefdom, and he published his own medical books through them. Wow. Morris Fishbein's medical encyclopedia is still in all the libraries.
Is it? Well, pretty amazing stuff.
Well, he spent the last 5 years of his life in London, going to first nights in London and living up the life of a millionaire and going to society circles and first nights in London. And that's why they finally dumped him, because he had practically abandoned the AMA.
Yeah, funniest thing. Okay, the idea that the pharmaceutical corporation has enslaved not only the American public, but much of the world with drugs and narcotics is one that is unfortunately missed by all too many people. But this is a long-term plan that the Rockefellers really installed almost 100 years ago now when they went through the medical schools and literally forced them to change their curricula to conform to pharmaceuticals as the answer. Electromedicine, of course, was drummed right out of the medical schools back then. There were all sorts of things that were working. I'm reminded, maybe as a boy you remember, I think it was Montgomery Ward that used to say, Sears was selling the ultraviolet light devices for healing. And
there were a lot of healing devices being sold in those days, and the AMA went after them all and absolutely eliminated every one of them.
They're gone.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, they're curiosities now. They're collected as antiquities.
Well, they know also, of course, that ultraviolet and violet light certainly is beneficial. And slowly but surely, the medical community is inching its way, as you know, Eustace, toward electromedicine and doing reinventing things that were literally invented 50, 75 years ago and longer.
Well, the AMA's war against chiropractic was one of the great sagas of medical treatment in this country.
Right.
And they finally... The chiropractics took them to federal court and won decisively against them.
What a war that is. Now, you have had an unusual life in that you have spent much, much time doing the research. Many researchers don't research. Now they spend time on the Internet with their keyboard and their mice, and they flick around from site to site. But you actually were in libraries and did, like Stanton Friedman in ufology and other great researchers. You do the work. You did the work. How long were you actually working in libraries?
Oh, about 50 years. I was in the stacks for the Library of Congress for years. I never saw daylight. I would go there at 9 in the morning and stay until 9 at night. In fact, I moved in and lived at the library for a while.
You did?
Well, there was a department there down in the basement. The Elizabeth Sprague Coolidge Auditorium for Entertainers has an auditorium on the ground floor.
Uh-huh.
And I found that wandering around there, I found that it had a little apartment back in the back for the entertainers, and with a cot and a sink and so forth, and everything was there. And so I needed a room at the time. I moved in. I stayed there quite a while.
Did anyone know it?
Oh, no, because I went to bed at 9 o'clock, and I didn't wander around at night. So, and nowadays, the halls of the Library of Congress are patrolled by dogs, so I would never have gotten away with that. Actually, I could have, because I didn't go out of the auditorium after dark.
An interesting story. Now, were you employed by the library, though?
Oh, yes. I was on the staff for quite a while.
Uh-huh.
I was personally hired by Luther Evans, who was a Librarian of Congress. And
uh-huh.
The reason was that the art school that I was going to had Luther Evans as the commencement speaker, at which I graduated.
He knew.
He offered me a job right away.
Very good. All right, stand by, and we'll be back our final segment with Eustace Mullins tonight. And again, a man who actually was in the library for, half a century and did the research. And we'll be back. Okay, and we're back with Eustace Mullins. So, when we look at the number of vaccinations given to our children, and I think in California, Eustace, it's 35 or more different vaccinations and boosters that the kids have to get by the time they're, in their mid-teenage years. And there are apparently, according to Dr. Lorraine Day, MD, there are dozens more in the pipeline that are being designed to give to our children. And it's almost something that it defies my ability to describe.
Well, the most appalling thing at all is that 6 major vaccinations are now given babies in the first 6 weeks of their existence.
When they have no functional immune system
to speak of.
They have
no immunity at all. And this is almost a cold-blooded murder, I believe, because the mercury content in these vaccinations, Temozol, is so dangerous and so destructive that... I don't see how these babies survive.
Well, a lot of them don't.
Oh, no, that's why you have your autism. It's purely a reaction to the mercury and the vaccination.
Thimerosal. Now, many of the lawsuits that have been filed, some class action, some individual, against the vaccine manufacturers for mercury included in the vaccine, which the plaintiffs contend are causing the autism of their children. The lives are ruined of the kids, of course. Many of these lawsuits don't get much press. Some have been dismissed. And there was also recently, and I can't remember the details, something was passed here and signed into law that, or at least is pending, where the actual vaccine manufacturers cannot be held accountable and liable for these kinds of toxic, well, what you want to call them, toxic injections.
Well, I think the legal defense is that you cannot prove a concrete connection between the mercury and the autism.
It's the only. It's the most flagrant common factor, the common denominator of
it's, well, it's well, so flagrant it hits you right in the face.
Yeah.
But yet they have dismissed practically every one of these suits. I don't know anyone's connected. I stayed with a very fine family, a Mormon family in Salt Lake when I was lecturing out there a couple of years ago, and their daughter was 21 years old and a very nice looking girl, and she had had autism, and she was had a mental age of about 6. And she worked as a guide around in the Mormon temple. But this a very beautiful girl, her life was destroyed. She had no future whatsoever.
I have a suspicion that dyslexia might be another factor.
Oh, dyslexia is certainly a symptom, yes.
Yeah. And it goes on and on. And the big issue, of course, is fear. The parents are intimidated. They are afraid. They're not only afraid if they don't give their kids these vaccines, the kids are going to get some terrible disease and die, or they're going to be prosecuted by the schools, by the authorities, and their kids won't be allowed into the schools. The schools tell parents that all the time, your kids can't come in here unless they're vaccinated. Of course, that's not true, but most parents don't know how to research and find out their own rights.
Oh, no, they have no defense whatsoever. And the Mormons themselves are very health conscious, you know, they don't drink or smoke.
Right.
But they're completely inundated by all this medical stuff. They go along with it.
Wow. Okay, just have a couple minutes left, Eustace. What do we want to cover in our last 2-3 minutes here that we haven't talked about yet?
Well, I think we've covered things pretty well. We've covered the Federal Reserve, and the medical book is quite important because it's just as important as ever. And every word in that book is just as more meaningful than when I wrote it because... Mm-hmm. Events have tended to bear out everything that I said in that book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the Association of Pharmaceutical Manufacturers is the most powerful lobby. Well, the American Medical Association is considered the most powerful lobby in Washington, but actually the Association of Pharmaceutical Manufacturers mm-hmm. is much wealthier.
Mm-hmm.
And Lloyd Cutler, the lobbyist for the Associated Pharmaceutical Manufacturers, was the principal advisor to President Clinton throughout his presidency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For these are very powerful people. And Lloyd Cutler was also the lobbyist for the automobile industry and the pharmaceutical industry.
No, he's been around.
Wilmer Cutler and Pickering was actually the biggest law firm in Washington.
So what do you see, Eustace? More and more war, more of the same for the immediate future?
Well, for the immediate future, but there is a tremendous waking up. I see all this, the talk shows, I think, are growing quite a bit. And the internet is just absolutely abuzz with all sorts of stuff. And the things that are going out on the internet every day are so amazing that I'm amazed there isn't revolution tomorrow morning. Because, people are getting information and more people are becoming aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is still less than probably 10% of the population, but my God, it's having a tremendous effect.
Well, the polarization of America is remarkable.
Oh, it certainly is.
The resident population is divided almost in half. But again,
it's irreconcilable. There's no meeting ground for them whatsoever.
No, and now we've got 20 to 25 million illegal immigrants in here. It's pretty amazing, the whole situation. I don't see any easy solution to it. I do also believe that the people who are the Straussians, the neocons, whatever you want to call them, I believe the people who have assumed power through what amounts to a coup in this country.
It is a coup.
Because
we couldn't have gone into Iraq unless it was a coup.
Right. I believe that those people will probably, Eustace, take us all down with them rather than give up their power willingly.
Well, they're actually self-destructive because the entire program for the 21st century was suicidal from the very beginning. And I said at the time that they'd set civilization back 1,000 years because they took us right back to the year 1100 and the Crusades and Muslims fighting Christians. That's where we are today.
It's very true. Thanks for the visit, Eustace. I appreciate all the things you've contributed. And take care. We'll talk again.
Very good. I look forward to it.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Eustace Mullins, again, one of the most controversial figures of our time, and interesting to hear his views on many subjects. 82 years old, and sharp as a tack, as they say. All right, we'll pause and come right back with more in just a few minutes.